Blog Talk Radio.
He's got the whole world in his head, he's got his home. And in his head, he's got his whole world. And in his head, he's got the whole wide world in his head. He's got the whole.
Singing like Louis Armstrong. Tonight we are talking about divine healing, divine deliverance. And right now we're in the middle of a drug war in Chicago up on the north side. The Mexicans and the Latins fighting and shooting. And Inglewood and Lundell, they're fighting. My thing is, Ron Manuel, we had to fight him to get him the release of the shooting of Juan Daniel, King Shot and Cover Up. And here's the Black Caucus, the Black Autumn, saying he can make good to be an ambassador in China to wherever he at. His blacks forget, or they're sellout. I want to play a little of what Malcolm said, and I want to play what Lewis said, just a little bit of Malcolm.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement. But still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master.
That's Malcolm X. And Malcolm X is telling the truth about what's happening now. You got the Black Autumn is endorsing Ron Manuel, be our ambassador. You got Dick Durbin. At all the players, and saying he all right. And when 16 shots in a cover up, it took a whole year because he covered up. But the Black Autumn forgot. They ain't said nothing about the killings going on in Inglewood and Lundell. They said nothing about that. We need a whole new set of Black Autumn. But the Black Autumn down there, is they all want some for self.
I see trees of green. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights.
Well, I just want to know, has your condition changed in the last 5 or 10 years? Still living like you was living. Our ancestors to pick cotton. And I was talking earlier to the black farmer. The black farmer said they couldn't get no money. Black farmers said the government won't give them no money. The black farmers said they give all the white folks the money. They pay them not to farm. The black farmers won't give no money. Right now, as I speak, in Mississippi, Arkansas, the black farmers suffer. And the head of the Black Farmers Association said, John Deere ain't never gave blacks nothing. Many tractors and compounds, they buy cotton paper. They never had a grant to give blacks nothing. And I endorsed them to boycott on John Deere. John Deere could have helped the black farmers. Even the government could have helped the black farmers. You know, Trump didn't do nothing to help the black farmers. Obama didn't do nothing to help the black farmers. You know, it's hard when you got a black man in power to say the word and don't say it. And all the kids that been killed, Sandy Hooks and all of them, Republicans, you got some Republicans and you got some Democrats. They say they're Democrats, but they're Republicans. I want to say this. When you look at what's going on, with all the killings going on in the world, to my East Side, just 17 people East Side, you're going to make it up. Only you make it up when he died. You make it up. I don't want to hear that. The wage of the ceiling is left to get the guy's not. I don't feel sorry for nothing. I feel that when you die, you know that God has already gave you the right direction. And I want to say, the seed of Abraham moved on temple. The seed of Abraham moved on temple. It will be coming soon to New Orleans. In Detroit. And it's a whole different law of what's going on. I just want you to know that something happened. And,
I see trees of green. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the skies, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, say, how do you do? They're really saying, hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Oh, yeah.
Of your him over his shoulder, Mr. Mosanica, remembers the plan, put them together, and really, Benjamin Banneker, is responsible for the design of Washington, D.C., one of the few American cities original design for some kind of traffic. If you look at Washington, the center of Washington, you can see the streets can take traffic. The smaller streets in the outer areas that wasn't in the original plan. Now, in the shaping of the United States, let's look, the British colony is going to become the United States. You had a series of colonies, 13 different colonies with 13 different flags, all of moving south, where the worst of the scum of England was dumped out of prisons, out of work hall houses. Ladies of the evening and the night, too. Slavery was forbidden for a while. These were debtors and prisoners and the like. What you cannot understand is that Europe's human garbage can into the so-called new world. The worst of that garbage can came to the United States. We inherited the worst of Europe. Not that any, that there were flowers other places. Now, in the New England state, some of the English came to escape persecution. Some of them were people of means, mostly in the southern states. Trying to better their condition, large number of them were indentured. All right, I'm getting to the point, and the point is, where did we fit into all of this? What has happened to the Africans in the United States between 1619 and 1776? Let's focus on 1776, during that period on the eve of the revolution. There has been contact between the Caribbean free man and the black free man of New England. And if you look at the biography, Ruswam, Jamaica, Prince Hall, Barbados, Robert Campbell, Jamaica again, Peter Austin, Antigua. If you look at the biography of all of these Caribbean people, not one called themselves a West Indian. Everyone thought of himself as an African person away from Africa. And so the flight one African person identical with that of other African people. All right, now the revolution comes. The alleged hero, I'm using the word advisedly, the alleged first man to build his life in the American Revolution was Christopher Adams. All right, I would not take a black hero out of history unless I got 10 to replace him. I'm going to put him in proper perspective. Christopher Adams, drinking with his Irish cut buddies, hanging out, everybody boasting about what they're going to do to the British. He just stumbled out of the bar ahead of the rest of them. It caught a bullet. It got into his... A world great accidental hero. Because white people say so many bad things about us, it's not true. When they say something good, it's not true. So we might as well let it ride. Okay. Christopher Adams, of course, was one of the early American Revolution, and I wouldn't take him out unless I was going to put them in. There were genuine heroes in the American Revolution. So at first, Washington didn't accept Black Americans in the American Revolution. Several families, the Priscilla Luce family, still alive, some in Chicago and some around Boston. I've actually talked to someone on the telephone and greeted those in Chicago. Because they were light complexion, one could tell where they belong. So they fought right straight through the American Revolution. But now, the second brutal winter, James Botan was a tent maker and might be the first Black middle class or person of considerable wealth. And he told Botan of the difficulty of the last winter, and he looked at some of the heavy wax matter tent cloth. He said the tent cloth you are using is much better than the cloth in our breeches, out of that cloth. And the breeches made by James Botan helped save Washington's army during the Second and the Third, the last winter of the American Revolution. Peter Salem saved his life at one point near the end of the Revolution. There was an attempt to poison Washington, and Samuel Francis, still exists, down around Wall Street area, of Caribbean descent, a Caribbean free man, and his daughter Phoebe noted the attempt to poison Washington, because that's what Washington went to eat. And he told Washington's intelligence, and that saved Washington's life. Washington took a liking to Francis. Francis, after Washington became president, and he became steward to Washington. And Francis, being a good cook and a restaurant man, began to invite people to the White House to have special food on Washington's birthday. This is the origin of Washington's birthday. But this is Caribbean restaurant man. Because he was light complexion, the assumption is that he was white. There's no proof that he was white. His daughter Phoebe seems to have taken more from her mother's side. There was much question that she belonged to us. But she saved Washington's life with some major had to play up to her romantically, cover up the secret of the attempt to poison Washington. She was by that angle. All right. Now, the second year of the war, Washington began to accept Blacks in the army. They began to distinguish themselves in a number of the battles in the American Revolution. A woman, Deborah Guise, as a man, fought in the American Revolution, a Black woman, 9 months. And when they discovered her, discharged her with a pension, all this is recorded, they gave her a certificate of virtue. I'm saying that was the worst thing they could have that's elected alone, nobody would talk about it. But see that as it may. See that as it may. This was an outstanding black woman in the Revolution. Also of mixed parents. Now we have to do something which we haven't done. We haven't made an assessment of Africans of mixed parents who were great patriarchs for our cause on the other side with their life complexity brought back to us that damn near saved us and made us king. We have been dealing with the cop-out so much. We haven't even dealt with those who endanger their very lives in the hands of the black side of the family. Now, there were a number of others in the American Revolution, and my main point is that for having fought in the war, we got nothing out of that either. But Washington proposed to some of these families that they send someone to fight in the war, but some of these aristocratic families did not want to send one of their sons. They sent a slave instead. And they sent the slave with the promise that after the war, the slave would be free. Now, while we know so much about this, an almost classical book titled it, offends me a little bit, called The Negro in Colonial New England by Lorenzo Turner. Now, yeah, it's the best documentation on the subject, the most scholarly documentation. But here we have case histories of blacks who fought in the American Revolution. It is from one of these case histories that I get the story of Benny Sam. This black New Englander fought in the American Revolution. His master, he was a slave. His master was probably named Manny. Sam is the only name they gave him. So he fought in the American Revolution. No doubt, he appeared himself to his white comrade who taught him how to read and write while he was in the army. When he came out and they tried to re-enslave him, he took it to court. And all of the veterans that fought with him came from Massachusetts, Connecticut, and all the things around to be moral support during the trial. All he needed was moral support. But with his rough human language, they had taught him. Now he could read and write. Petitions of Massachusetts court for his citizenship and his rights. A free man, and his petition is a great piece of American literature that could be printed separate and distinct from the trial and read as a piece of literature. Mine was the work of Amos Fortune, whose life started the American Revolution, but who continued. It was a vestor man in the white church after the American Revolution. All right, we have been the people who made the first overtures to get along with other people. Now let's see what went wrong and how it went wrong. The making of the Constitution. It is now the 200th anniversary of the Constitution. Now, who made the Constitution? Who were they talking about? What was their intent? promise was never made to us. And if you face this reality, you might understand what you have to do. Now, in making a constitution, 52 days of deliberation in Philadelphia, they said originally. The president means what they said originally. This debate over this judge is what they said originally. But they are non-partisan whites or pseudo-whites who many times get a leverage by supporting the Gentile establishment and by rendering a service managing us. They can steal themselves to the Gentile establishment to the extent in life. Now you see what it's done. Now you can see what other ethnic groups come in and manage your community, manage your stores. While the government even gives them money to assist them in doing it. While you are not resident entrepreneurs in your own community. Now, I believe all of this community, any community, once you organize to do so, and once you understand the global importance of African people in the world, you could actually do it. But you're so mesmerized by other people, assume there's something magic about running a store, marketing food, and turning wheels, and clocks, and mechanics. So they had shoes, or lived in houses that had windows. What people make you forget, especially what you was, and your historical memory, generally controls you right now. Okay, the revolution is over. Where are we? In the South, still safe. There are some free blacks in the South, terribly restricted. No public accommodation. There's some free blacks in New England. Really, for the voice of the free blacks got heard. But among those who heard the most, Prince Hall and his African Lodge, the first black Masonic order. Now blacks are beginning to organize. They're beginning to express themselves in poetry. They're beginning to express themselves in the slave narrative. They're beginning to question whether they go to the side door or the balcony of churches. Soon, Richard Allen, James Barrett would challenge the white church, and they would find the AFB. Now the independent black church is on the way. You got in the, and we are approaching the 1800s. As we approach the 1800s, we have the semblance of a church organization, the semblance of literary organization, the semblance of a protest movement. Now, as we came into the 1800s, let's look at that first half of the 19th century. But in my opinion, was the most dynamic period in the history Black America. It was the most dynamic period because these blacks were clear about what they wanted to do and what they had to do that you are right now. They didn't have a whole lot of hang-up illusions that you've got right now. They weren't thinking about integration, vibing as a people. In the late 1790s, a sea captain began to take life back to Africa using his own ship. So can you imagine now a sea captain with three ships doing trade on the sea of the world? In the 1790s, and today we don't even own a Nisa rowboat. A master sailor with other sailors at his disposal. So as we came into the 1800s, more slaves being from the south, the birth of the slave narrative, a special kind of American literature, finally the Douglas School, Frederick Douglass, which began publication. But 1800 itself, the process in the Carolinas. Now you're beginning to see organization. Along with this kind of organization, see a different organization in the North. People are coming together. Martin Delaney, Frederick Douglass, the great minister Henry Highland Garnett, poets are coming, Dame Wilkins Harper, Judith Whitman, Syrian. I don't dwell on that because I'm not a great Judith Whitman fan. I thought she dismissed herself. See that as a message. The importance of Phyllis Whitley is that she wrote. Women wasn't writing much poetry during that period, good or bad. The fact that she wrote bad poetry. There are some atrocious lines in some of them. Turned me off in that. I'm glad God took me from my pagan land, taught my pagan heart to understand. She didn't come from no pagan land. Africa was no pagan land. In a tribute to George Washington and some board. Well, the fact that I'm not a Phyllis Whitley fan is established, so I can go on. But during this period, a slave on Long Island, my old master promised me when he died, so long his head got bald, got out of the ocean of dying at all. This is beginning of cynicalism in black poetry. That is believable. I don't believe it. All right, now, the black founding father, as against the white founding father, that Lerone Bennett writes about beautifully in his work for the Mayflower. And the thing about Lerone Bennett as against John Hope Franklin, John Hope Franklin packs in a lot of historical information. But John's writing is so dull, I didn't say it's incorrect. It turns you off. Lerone Bennett is not as scholarly as John Hope Franklin. But Lerone Bennett makes the language sing. He won't turn you off a bit. You read all of it. Pick up his book, you read the whole thing. John Hope, you could go to sleep with all these facts so packed on, you know, without interesting explanation. In Lerone Bennett's work, Before the Mayflower, and another work called The Shaping of Black America, the first two chapters, White Servitude, second chapter, First Generation, dealing with the first black to be brought to the United States. All right, now, let's look at the early period of Douglass. Let's look at the black stand true to democratic promise than the white bonnet promise. Douglas, Allen, founded the Independent Black Church, along with James Barrett. We founded some of our large organizations, Prince Hall, the role of men of the Caribbean freemen who came to the United States, the nationalist writing of Martin Delaney, sometimes referred to as the father of black nationalism, said that to Douglas, "I'm glad God made me a black man." Douglas was, as far as white, I'm a man.
The Rising Ministry.
All right. Now we're into the period where we're finding our voice. We're into the period when Douglas would write his famous narrative. Other slave narratives would be written. Now there's another famous slave revolt. Denmark Beebe, a black freeman whose known language and unfortunate circumstance would literally hold up the revolt. When you study slave revolt in this country, this was the best planned slave revolt. Everything worked against it. That was supposed to be in one place, stampeded, wasn't in the place, take the men to another place. Rain and the bridge got washed out. Couldn't contact the people on the other side. Circumstances tend to work together. The secret keepers, while they kept the secret, they themselves couldn't connect. Yet when they called him and tried to pull the confession out of him, he told them nothing. And from his silence came the spiritual. He never said a mumbling word. In other words, he didn't give nobody's name away. Now, black expression is taking a new turn. Would take a dramatic turn. 1829. Here we need to pause a little bit. Walker and a big slave who owned a secondhand clothing store and a pawn shop began to write an appeal to the colored people of the world. Now, David Walker could well be the first pan-Africanist in literature. Not to the colored people of the United States, the colored people of the world. And if you listen to the record Malcolm X made last, one of them, called Message to the Grassroots, David Walker's appeal, David Walker was the forerunner of a Malcolm X. David Walker appealed to all blacks to take up arms against that slave master and to take your chances, because continuing in slavery was a more difficult chance than your life with the hope of freedom.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, "We got a good house here," the house Negro said, "Yeah, we got a good house here." Whenever the master said "we," he said "we." That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick." He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, "Let's run away. Let's escape. Let's separate," that house Negro would look at you and say, "Man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this?" That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, "I'm the only Negro out here." "I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro." And if someone come to you right now and say, "Let's separate," you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. "What you mean separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa." That's what you say. "Why, you left your mind in Africa." On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died.
If someone come to the field, Negro, and said, let's separate, let's run. He didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say,